In spite of the impression given by Dr. Watson in his stories, they can sometimes be of use.
No, no, my dear sir. Such a course is utterly impossible. Once the law is revoked, it cannot be stayed again, and for the sake of the college, it is essential to avoid scandal. Your discretion is as well known as your powers, and if you are the one man in the world who can help me, I beg you, Mr. Holmes, to do what you can.
We can at least listen, Holmes.
Very well, Mr. Soames. Proceed.
Thank you, gentlemen. To begin, I must explain that tomorrow is the first day of examination for the Fortescue Scholarship. I am one of the examiners. My subject is Greek, and the first of the papers consists of a large passage of Greek translation which the candidate has not seen. This passage is printed on the examination paper, and it would naturally be an immense advantage if the candidate could prepare it in advance. For this reason, great care is taken to keep the paper secret. Today, about 3 o'clock, the proofs of this paper arrives from the printers. The exercise consists of half a chapter of Thucydides. I had to read it over carefully, as the text must be absolutely correct. At 4:30, my task was not yet completed. I had, however, promised to take tea in a friend's rooms.
I trust you locked the proofs away before keeping your appointment?
I left them upon my desk.
Oh, dear.
I was absent rather more than an hour. You are aware, Mr. Holmes, that our college doors are double.
A green baize one within and a heavy oak one without.
Quite so. Well, as I approached my outer door, I was amazed to see a key in it. For an instant, I imagined it as my own, but on feeling in my pocket, I found it there. The only duplicate which exists belongs to my servant Bannister, a man who has looked after my room for 10 years and whose honesty is absolutely above suspicion. I found that the key was indeed his, and that he had very carelessly left the key in the door when he came out.
When did Bannister pay this visit, Mr. Soames?
It must have been within a very few minutes of my leaving. His forgetfulness about the key would have mattered little upon any other occasion, but on this one day it has produced the most deplorable consequences. The moment I looked at my table, I was aware that someone had rummaged among my papers. The proof was in 3 long slips. I had left them all together. Now I found that one of them was lying on the floor, one was on the side table near the window, and one was where I had left it.
The one on your table was the third page. The first was on the floor and the second by the window.
Well, yes, but
pray continue your very interesting statement, Mr. Soames.
At first I imagined that Bannister had taken the unpardonable liberty of examining my papers, but when I confronted him over it, he nearly fainted with shock. I am convinced that when he denies my accusations, he was speaking the truth. The alternative was that someone passing had observed the key in the door and had known that I was out and had entered to look at the papers. A large sum of money is at stake, for the scholarship is a very valuable one, and an unscrupulous man might very well run a risk in order to gain advantage over his fellows. I was at my wit's end, and suddenly the happy thought occurred to me that you were in the town, and I came straight round to put the matter into your hands. See my dilemma, Mr. Holmes. Either I must find the man, or else the examination must be postponed until fresh papers are prepared, and since this cannot be done without explanation, there will ensue a hideous scandal which will throw clouds not only on the college, but on the university.
I shall be happy to look into it and give you such advice as I can. The case is not entirely devoid of interest. Had anyone visited you in your room after the papers came to you?
Why, yes. Young Dornat Rass, an Indian student who lives on the same stair, came in to ask me some particulars about the examination.
For which he was entered?
Yes, Doctor.
And the papers were on your table?
Rolled up, yes.
And no one else came to your room?
No one.
Did anyone know that these proofs would be there?
No one save the printer.
What about your servant, Bannister?
Certainly not.
Where is Bannister now?
He was very ill, poor fellow. I left him collapsed in a chair. I was in such a hurry to come to you. Oh, I locked the papers up before I left.
Then it amounts to this, Mr. Soames. Unless Dalat Ras tampered with the papers, the culprit came upon them accidentally without knowing that they were there.
That seems logical, Mr. Holmes.
Logic is my stock in trade, sir. Well, let's go around and examine the scene. Watson, there's no need for you to accompany us, I think.
But Holmes...
This isn't really one of your cases, Doctor. Mental, not physical. Besides, I should hate for you to miss dinner. The landlady babbled of green keys at 7:30, did she not?
Holmes, don't be tiresome. I am your official biographer.
Biographer? Gentlemen, above all things, I desire to settle the matter quietly and discreetly.
Calm yourself, sir. If the case ever sees the pages of the Strand magazine, which I doubt, Watson can be relied upon to conceal any details which attempt to identify the college or any of the parties involved, yourself included. Perhaps you might set the story in Oxbridge or Camford, eh, Watson?
Don't talk nonsense, Holmes.
Very well, Mr. Soames. We are at your disposal. Footprints, I'm afraid. One could hardly hope for any upon so dry a day. Bannister, you seem to have quite recovered. I understand that you left your key in the door.
Yes, sir.
Was it not very extraordinary that you should do this on the very day when these papers were inside?
It was most unfortunate, sir. I had the tea tray in my hand. I thought I would come back for the key. Then I forgot. I've occasionally done the same thing at other times.
When did you enter the room?
4:30. That's Mr. Soames's tea time.
And how long did you stay?
When I saw he was absent, I withdrew at once.
Did you look at the papers on the table?
No, sir, certainly not.
Has the outer door a spring lock?
It has not, Mr. Holmes.
Then it was open all the time?
Yes, sir.
Anyone in the room could get out?
Yes, sir.
When Mr. Soames returned and called for you, you were very much disturbed.
Oh, very much, sir. Such a thing has never happened during the many years I've been here. I nearly fainted, sir.
So I understand. Where were you when you began to feel faint?
Where was I? Here, near the door.
And Mr. Soames left you in a chair when he came to fetch us. Which chair?
This one, by the window, near this little table.
Why did you pass these other chairs?
I don't know, sir. It didn't matter to me where I sat.
I really don't think he knew much about it, Mr. Holmes. He was looking very bad, quite ghastly.
I see. It's quite clear what has happened here. Someone entered and took the papers, sheet by sheet, from the central table. He carried them over to the window table, because from there he could see if he were coming across the courtyard, Mr. Soames, and so could effect an escape.
But he didn't see me, because I entered by the side door.
Ah, that's very good. We know, in any case, what was in his mind.
Perhaps if the paper on which he wrote was thin, some trace of it might come through upon the table's polished surface.
An excellent notion, Watson. But unfortunately, I see nothing. Except for this, however.
What is it, Holmes?
Well, he wrote so furiously that he broke his pencil and had, as you observed, to sharpen it again. The pencil was not an ordinary one. It was above the usual size, with a soft lead, the outer colour was dark blue, the maker's names printed in silver lettering, and the piece remaining is only about an inch and a half long. Find such a pencil, Mr. Soames, and you've got your man. When I add that he possesses a large and very blunt knife, you have an additional aid.
I can follow the other points, but really, in this matter of the pencils...
May I see the three sheets? You said you locked them away?
In this drawer. Come here.
Mr. Soames. No, no finger impressions. Tell me, were you aware of any hurrying feet on the stairs as you entered the outer door?
No, Mr. Holmes, I can't say I was.
I see. And this cut in the leather on your writing table?
Cut?
It looks quite fresh, a positive tear, in fact. It begins with a thin scratch and ends in a jagged hole.
But the table is brand new! It was smooth and unstained when I was working at it earlier. This is terrible.
On the contrary, Mr. Soames, fortune has been your friend.
Fortune? Do you know how much that writing desk costs?
I think what Mr. Holmes means is that the more featureless and commonplace a crime is, the more difficult it is to bring home. But here, your intruder has left us these traces of his individuality.
And here is another. A small pellet of black dough or clay, with grains of something which looks like sawdust in it. Roughly pyramidal in shape and hollowed out, I perceive. Dear me, this is very interesting. I am much indebted to you for directing my attention to this case, Mr. Soames. Tell me, Bannister, have you mentioned to any of the three gentlemen whom you attend that anything is amiss?
Oh, no, sir, not a word.
You haven't seen any of them?
No, sir.
Mr. Soames, where does that door lead to?
To my bedroom.
Have you been in it since your adventure?
No, I came straight for you.
I should like to have a glance round, if you don't mind.
If you insist, Mr. Holmes.
What a charming old-fashioned room.
What's behind this curtain?
Nothing of any importance, Mr. Holmes. I simply hang a change of clothes there.
So I see. Now, Mr. Soames, we will take a walk in the quadrangle, if you please.
As you wish, Mr. Holmes. Bannister, that will be all for now.
Oh, very good, sir. Oh, Mr. Holmes?
Yes?
I should just like to say, I don't believe there is any gentleman in this university who is capable of profiting by such an action. I'll not believe it, sir.
I see. Good evening, Bannister.
That's around your three rooms, I see. It seems the birds are all in their nests.
One of them seems restless enough.
That's nice.
I should like to have a peep at each of them. Is that possible?
No difficulty in the world, Mr. Holmes. This set of rooms is quite the oldest in the college, and it's not unusual for visitors to go over. Come along, I'll have some drinks.
Given the circumstances, I believe a certain amount of substance.
Gilchrist, who are you?
My name is Sigelson, sir. Perhaps you're familiar with my name, Olaf Sigelson?
Of course, Mr. Sigelson. I read the reports of your recent expedition to Persia. Please, do come in. To what do I owe the honour?
I apologize for the inconvenience of the hour, but I have always been interested in history, and I understand that these rooms boast some really curious pieces of medieval domestic architecture. Perhaps if you might allow me to study them?
Please, help yourself, Mr. Sigerson. I hope you won't mind, but I have some studying of my own to do in the meantime.
Oh, of course, of course. Ah, now this is something quite magnificent. I really must make a sketch of it. Oh, dear.
What is it?
I appear to have broken my pencil. Do you by any chance have a knife?
A knife, Mr. Sigerson?
Do you by any chance have a knife?
A knife, Mr. Sigerson?
A knife, Mr. Roth, to sharpen the point, you see.
Of course. I would have thought that an eminent explorer such as yourself would be prepared for any eventuality. here you are, sir.
Thank you, young man.
Is anything wrong, Mr. Sigerson?
Wrong? No, no. I was merely musing on how sharp the blade is.
Any luck, Holmes?
I see neither a blunt knife nor a sharp pencil.
Not to worry. Perhaps you'll have better luck with Miles McLaren. Soames certainly seems to think so. He's definitely in. We saw the light.
Mr. McLaren, my name is Olaf Sigurdsson.
I don't care who you are. You can go to blazes.
If I might be allowed to speak to you for a moment.
Well, tomorrow's the exam, and I won't be drawn by anyone. Now push off before I kick you down the stairs.
McLaren is an intolerably rude fellow.
His conduct was certainly uncourteous.
And, under the circumstances, rather suspicious.
Can you tell me his exact height?
His height? Really, Mr. Holmes, I cannot undertake to say. He is taller than the Indian, not so tall as Gilchrist. I suppose 5'6" would be about it.
I see. Very well, I wish you good night.
Good gracious, Mr. Holmes, you're surely not going to leave me in this abrupt fashion. You don't seem to realize the position. I must take some definite action tonight. I cannot allow the examination to be held tomorrow if one of the papers has been tampered with. The situation must be faced.
You must leave it as it is. I shall drop round early in the morning and chat the matter over. It is possible that I may be in a position then to indicate some course of action. Meanwhile, change nothing. Nothing at all.
If you insist, sir.
I do. You can be perfectly easy in your mind. We shall certainly find some way out of your difficulties. Goodbye.
Dr. Watson, I feared that you'd given it up in despair. What am I to do? Shall the examination proceed?
Let it proceed by all means, Mr. Soames.
But this rascal, whoever he is...
shall not compete.
You know who it is, sir?
I think so, Bannister. I have obtained fresh evidence that will make the matter as clear as day.
What fresh evidence?
Watson, would you be so good as to place those two clay pyramids upon the table here?
Zoom.
And we add to our collection a third.
Another one?
It's not for nothing that I turned myself out of bed at the untimely hour of 6 this morning. I put in 2 hours' hard work and covered 5 miles, but at least I had something to show for it. It's a fair argument that wherever number 3 came from is also the source of numbers 1 and 2, eh, Watson?
The second palace.
Your visitor left traces in your bedroom as well as in your sitting room, Mr. Soames.
My bedroom? What could he have wanted there?
I think it's clear enough. You came back by an unexpected way, so he had no warning until you were at the very door. What could he do? He caught up everything which would betray him and rushed into your bedroom to conceal himself. The bed is too low and the wardrobe too shallow, so he must have hidden behind the curtain.
Sir, do you mean to tell me that all the time Mr. Soames and I were talking in this room, we had the man prisoner if only we'd known it?
So I read it. Now, Bannister, perhaps you would be so good as to tell us the truth about yesterday's incident.
The truth? But I've told you everything, sir.
You have nothing to add?
Nothing at all, sir.
Well, then I must make some suggestions to you. When you sat down on that chair yesterday, you did so in order to conceal some object which would have shown who had been in the room.
Bannister?
No, sir. Certainly not.
Then, when your master left to consult me, you released the man who was hiding in that bedroom.
I can't help you, sir.
Ah, that's a pity. In that case, you can give us no further information. Gentlemen, if this matter is to remain private, we must give ourselves certain powers and resolve ourselves into a small private court-martial. You there, if you please, Mr. Soames. Watson, you here. And I'll take the armchair in the middle. There. I think that we are now sufficiently imposing to strike terror into a guilty breast.
You're expecting someone, I take it?
I took the liberty of sending a note to the guilty party, requesting his presence here at 8:30. It is nearly that time now. The door, please, Bannister. Do come in, Mr. Gilchrist.
Mr. Sigerson?
A deception of sorts. My name is Sherlock Holmes. This is my colleague, Dr. Watson. Mr. Soames, Bannister, you know. We are all quite alone here, and no one need ever know one word of what passes between us. We can, therefore, be perfectly frank with each other. We want to know, Mr. Gilchrist, how such an honourable man ever came to commit such an action as that of yesterday.
Bannister, what did you tell them?
I never said a word, Mr. Gilchrist, sir. Not one word.
But you have now. You must say that your position is hopeless, Gilchrist. Your only chance lies in a frank confession. Perhaps it would be easier for you if I were to tell you what occurred, and you can check me where I am wrong. You employed your afternoon at the athletic grounds, where you've been practicing jump. You returned to St. Luke's carrying your jumping shoes, and as you passed this window, you saw the proofs upon the table and conjectured what they were. You went to the door and perceived the key which had been left by Bannister's carelessness. A sudden impulse came over you to enter and see if they were indeed the proofs. It was not a dangerous exploit, for you could always pretend that you'd simply looked in to ask a question. Well, when you saw what they were, you yielded to temptation. You put your shoes on the writing table. What was it you put on that chair near the window?
Gloves.
Gloves. Very well, you put your gloves on the chair, and took the proofs sheet by sheet to copy them. You thought your tutor must return by the main gate and that you'd see him. As we know, he came back by the side gate. Suddenly you heard him at the door. There was no possible escape. You forgot your gloves, but you caught up your shoes and darted into the bedroom. It's clear that only Bannister here could have let you out, since he was left in the room when Mr. Soames left. Bannister, can you clear up the last point in this mystery and tell us the reasons for your action?
Well, it was simple enough, sir, if you had only known. But with all your cleverness, it was impossible that you could know. Time was, sir, when I was butler to old Sir Jabez Gilchrist, this young gentleman's father.
Good heavens!
When he was ruined, I came to the college as servant, but I never forgot my old employer because he was down in the world. I watched his son all I could for the sake of the old days. Well, sir, when I came into this room yesterday when the alarm was given, the very first thing I saw was Mr. Gilchrist's tan gloves lying on that chair. I knew those gloves well, and I understood their message. If Mr. Soames saw them, the game was up.
I flopped down into the chair, and nothing would budge me until he went for you, Mr. Holmes. Then out came my poor young master, whom I dandled on my knee, and confessed it all to me. Wasn't it natural, sir, that I should save him? Could you blame me, sir?
No, indeed.
Well, Mr. Gilchrist, have I given a true account of what occurred?
Yes, Mr. Holmes, it's all true.
Have you nothing to add?
Yes, sir, I have. I see you haven't been through your correspondence yet. On your desk, you will find a letter which I wrote to you in the middle of a restless night, before I knew that my sin had found me out.
Mm-hmm. Sir, I have determined not to go in for the examination. I have been offered a commission in the Rhodesian police, and I am going out to South Africa at the earliest opportunity. Well, I am indeed pleased to hear that you did not intend to profit by your unfair advantage.
But why did you change your purpose?
Mr. Bannister, is the man who set me in the right path.
Well, wasn't it also natural that I should try to speak to him as his dead father would have done, and make him understand that he couldn't profit by such a deed?
Thank you, sir.
It is human to err, Mr. Gilchrist, and at least no one can accuse you of being a callous criminal.
Well, Sir Holmes, I think we have cleared your little problem up, and our breakfast awaits us at home. Come, Watson. The moment Sir Holmes said that no one, not even Bannister, could have known the papers were in his room, the case began to take a different shape in my mind. The printer one could, of course, dismiss. He could examine the papers in his own office. But it seemed an unthinkable coincidence that the man should dare to enter the room by chance on the very day the papers were on the table.
So the man who entered must have known the papers were there.
Quite so. You remember, I examined the window in Soames' room. He supposed I was contemplating the possibility of someone having, in broad daylight, under the eyes of all those opposite rooms, forced himself through it.
I must confess I supposed something of the sort.
I was, in fact, measuring how tall a man would need to be in order to see, as he passed, what papers were on the central table. I am 6 feet high, and I could do it with an effort. No one less than that would have a chance.
So if one of the three students were a man of unusual height, he'd be the most likely. And what about the scratch on the writing table and the three clay pyramids?
They should have told me all if I were the ideal reasoner you're so fond of depicting. But when Soames mentioned that Gilchrist was a long-distance jumper, the whole thing came to me in an instant, and I only needed certain corroborative proofs.
The scratch, Holmes?
Was caused by one of the spikes on the soles of his jumping shoes. The scratch was slight at one side, but deepened in the direction of the bedroom door. Now, that in itself was enough to show that the shoe had been drawn in that direction, and that the culprit had taken refuge there. The earth around the spike had been left on the table, and the second sample was loosened and fell in the bedroom. I may add that I walked out to the athletic grounds this morning, saw that tenacious black clay is used in the jumping pit, and carried away a specimen of it, together with some of the fine tan or sawdust which is strewn over it to prevent the athlete from slipping.
It all seems so simple when you explained it, Holmes.
It has been a pleasant distraction, at least.
I thought you told Soames you didn't want any distractions.
Well, it appears I am occasionally wrong about some. As to Mr. Gilchrist, I trust that a bright future awaits him in Rhodesia. For once he has fallen low, let us see in the future how I might.
Members of the cast.